of green, red roses too.
This is Ed Cohen, your broadcast host on GlobalRadioTalkShow.com, a service of GlobalHRNews.com. I'm in San Diego, and Barry Kozlov, our special guest today, is in St. Louis, Missouri. Let's welcome Barry.
Hello, Ed.
Thanks for being our guest today. We're going to be talking about selection and assessment, specifically relating to having the right people in the right position, in the right location, at the right time, at the right price. It's really an expensive proposition if it blows up, isn't it?
Tremendously expensive, as you and particularly your listeners know.
Barry, tell us specifically how long your involvement with this field.
SRI was founded by myself and Dr. Ed Gatos, an industrial psychologist, 40 years ago. And the purpose in creating SRI was as a vehicle to conduct social science research to identify the factors that predict international assignment failure and success. From that research, the research identified selection as the critical activity companies should be doing to ensure the success of the international assignments. And it developed in terms of not only assignments, but in terms of developing their bench strength of future potential critical talent, both technically as well as leadership. And so from the original research, we then did a number of field studies on selection systems at McDonnell Douglas, Saudi Arabia, SBC, the forerunner to the new AT&T, and also a government. We worked with the Saudi Arabian Riyadh Development Authority with their master planning organization. So that allowed us to do longitudinal studies to see, could one predict accurately people that were being hired into an organization for a particular position, or they were being assigned already within the organization to a particular global venture?
So you said longitudinal. What's that mean?
Well, longitudinal would be looking over time, how are people functioning in a particular task. The other aspect of that would be cross-sectional. Cross-sectional study would say, be looking at a number of selection vendors and then looking over time longitudinally, who was predictive of success or potential failure or problems, the assignees.
So I want to jump aside here and ask you a question for commenting about selection. So particularly with regard to a sensitive position, particularly with regard to international postings.
Yes.
What about selection of the spouse and family?
Well, if we look at it as a constellation of factors, you have essentially three sets that play into any international assignment, whether it's short-term, over a period of weeks, spread out over a number of months and years, or whether it's an assignment that's almost up to a year, or it's a multiple-year assignment. One is needing to evaluate rigorously for three areas. One is going to be job suitability. All selection, whether global or domestic, is tied to job relevance. That's why the person's taking the job. So part of the assessment is looking at job suitability or job fit of the employee. The employee's lifestyle or the constellation of factors in their life would then fall into the other two buckets. One would be, what are the personal factors of both the employee and the spouse or a fiance or a domestic partner? And thirdly would be, what are the familial conditions? And so one has to look at all of those aspects in order to, and by the way, looking at personal factors and looking at familial conditions are relevant. That is, they're job relevant because not the right timing for people taking an international assignment or people not suitable for managing the stressors will impact the job which the person is being sent on or hired for. So a company has to rigorously screen for those three variables.
So to what extent do people lie? You know, in other words, to make the selection process authentic or more authentic.
Yes.
Is it done not to trick people, but to just go deeper and not just take surface explanations or answers to questions to find out if they're lying, trying to create an image?
Yes.
Not true.
Yes. Let me just articulate your question in another way.
Thank you.
We're looking at a continuum, and on one side of the continuum, we could put individuals that actually have a psychological disability. Might be a borderline personality, could be somebody who has schizophrenia. You might have someone on that area of the continuum that they have had a traumatic upbringing, abusive family relationship, very challenging environment that they grew up in. For example, they grew up in a country that was in an economic crisis or a war situation, and those will impact the particular individual, how they respond to situations. So in terms of lying, we can expand that definition to say lying could be generated simply by an individual, on the one hand, wanting to promote themselves. They have an overarching ambition, or they see themselves as omnipotent. And you could almost characterize these people as narcissistic. That is to say, they don't think about the consequences and impact of their decisions on other people as far as what will support their personal agenda or what's motivating them. So in terms of the truth of that individual versus somebody who had a traumatic upbringing, and even though they might have great responsibilities now in their career, we're talking now about the employee, the way they respond to situations will be the level of stress it creates in them. There's an adage in psychology, under stress, people regress. So the person who might lie because they have high status interests, and you had mentioned something in terms of a person presenting themselves, image presentation, that person will have a wholly different agenda than somebody who had a traumatic background. Then again, it'll be different than another person on that human continuum who just have an inordinately complex family life. That is to say, an aging parent was recently diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, or an employee's, the spouse was not raised by his or her parents, but by, let's say, a maternal grandmother, that person now has dementia. Or they have a child who's been diagnosed with Tourette syndrome. That's going to engender a lot of stress with people. That will impact their ability to make a well-informed decision at a certain time about taking the position or a position.
Interesting, isn't it? So a company gets into a legal minefield with all this stuff.
Yes. Would you like me to address that, the legal issue?
Please.
I had mentioned earlier that whether it's global selection or domestic, it's considered by the government one piece of cloth. And what I mean by that is selection is governed by compliance laws. And those compliance laws have to deal with two dimensions. One is liability to the organization. And the organization could be either a corporate organization, Dow Chemical, or a government organization, the Pentagon. They are both subject in their hiring practices to the same compliance laws. And underpinning those laws are the two dimensions or poles that I was about to mention. One is liability, limiting the liability that a potential employee, person going through a screening process for a job, or somebody currently in the company who is being evaluated amongst a number of other people for, let's say, either a domestic position or an international position. Depending on the system that is used, that person might have a legal case. They might say, I'm being discriminated against, which goes into EEOC, ADA, and right to privacy, 1991 law. So on the one hand, organizations have to deal with potential for liability discrimination, and selection systems have to be designed, and any methods used domestically or internationally have to think foremost about, is there a potential for the company being sued? Is there potential liability? The other polarity, which is equally important to liability, is do the assessment methods predict the person's performance for doing that particular job over time and within the context? If it's an individual working within an IT position in a clean room, they're not interacting with very many people. That's one sort of assessment method. If a person's managing other people, they have to build teams, and they have a different set of skills that they need. And so that requires different assessment methods. Again, whether it's domestic or international, because there's both job suitability as well as personal factors and familial conditions. So in terms of liability and the compliance aspects, in the United States, all selection systems, both domestic and global, have to adhere to the federal uniform guidelines and employee selection procedures. And that goes back to EEOC, ADA, right to privacy. But also, they have to conform to the American Psychological Association's Division of Industrial Organizational Psychology Standards. I know this is a real mouthful. Standards for educational and industrial testing. And so globally, whatever a company does, they have to choose a vendor and vendor products that adhere to the federal standards and the industrial psychology standards. Why? To limit liability to the organization and to predict that the person can do the job successfully.
You're definitely an expert at this, I could tell. So I want to circle back to legal compliance in a few minutes. So critical talent, technical people, young people, for instance, are sent for development purposes as, I guess, a test to see how well they do. And then you have the country manager, I guess, leaders. And so you get all different levels of testing, don't you?
You certainly do. And when we talk about testing, we're actually talking about assessment methodologies. So it could be a test that is discrete psychological traits that are being evaluated for a particular position, or it could be a certain type of interview process, telephone, face-to-face, again, job criteria in mind, organizational expectations, country and culture the person's going into, whether it's psychometric testing, whether it's interviewing, whether it's an assessment center, all that information has to focus back on what we call a triangulating to give multiple data points that allows the company to be able to predict how that person is going to do given what the company is trying to accomplish. And what I mean by accomplish is, and you just said it, critical technical talent. The person has a particular knowledge, skills, and abilities that the company or government organization is requiring for that. Or it could be somebody on a high potential manager, fast-tracked, being rotated rather quickly through a number of positions over a period of time. Either they'll be promoted after a certain amount of time, or they'll be pulled out of that high potential program, but they're being targeted for domestic and international assignments to mature them, to both observe them as well as mature them in terms of their knowledge, their skills, and abilities. And then you have leaders, as you pointed out, and the leaders themselves, the company has their own expectations. Is this person going over to a well-oiled organization? Are they having to fix something broken because the previous leadership regime had been stealing from the company? And so they have to do forensic work, rebuild the trust in the organization. Is the person going over because it's a paper company and they own 23 paper mills in China and they need to divest them? that's a very different, on all those are very different undertakings that the people have to do. Again, that goes to job suitability. Am I going off track, Ed, or am I giving you information that's rich enough in terms of your question?
It's very rich, and I love it. And so let's go into the predictive.
Yes.
I don't want to know your secrets, but how does all this become predictive assessment method?
Good question. And if you can perceive a graph where you have an x-axis and a y-axis, and on the left, we got a bar going from 0 to 100, and we call that liability. And then on the other dimension, similarly, going from 0 to 100, on the bottom, horizontal line, that's called predictive, predicting performance. In the field of industrial psychology, it's understood that any form of testing has the highest liability and is least predictive of performance. That's because instruments, both cognitive, evaluating for intelligence, and personality, they have geometrically inherent error within them. Not arithmetic, but geometric. And in reviewing instruments, and there's some very good instruments for looking at personality and a person's intelligence, one is always evaluating the outliers, 2 to 3 standard deviations from the norm. A licensed psychometrician, somebody with the qualifications and licensures to develop as well as interpret instruments, they know that anything close to the norm, the mean average score, we can't figure it out. It's only the outliers that we can look at. But psychological tests can be skewed, and you mentioned it earlier about lying. There's a phenomenon in testing called social desirability that whenever a person knows they're going to be tested, somebody's going to look at those results, they unconsciously will skew their answers so that they're looked on favorably. It's a human trait that most people have to look our best, so to speak, or to meet the expectations of us. There's a rule of thumb in industrial psychology. If companies are going to use instruments, cognitive or personality, they should only be published instruments that have been evaluated by the American Psychological Association. So the cultural tools that are market, and that's where most corporations lean today and are tending to pour more and more weight. They're leaning on digital, online instruments, many of them that are designed to look like psychological tests, but they're evaluating cultural adaptability, cultural agility. And the only value of a cultural test is what's called the selection effect, is to raise a person's receptivity. And it has to be paired with an interview, a facilitated interview, to help understand what are these people's true intention. And now we're going back to your question of how honest are these people being with the organization? Also, how honest are they being with their family? And how honest is the person being with themselves? So it's called the do's and don'ts of testing. It goes generally to just assessment. Is one has to have at least 3 data points. I think I mentioned that earlier. And that should be some form of published instrument. Use a cross-cultural tool, but only as a way to stimulate people's receptivity and to then debrief them to find out, are these people deluding themselves? Or do they have their heads screwed on straight in terms of the challenges they will be facing? And are they capable of planning to deal with the various circumstances in their life and what they will be facing? Add to that, and let me go back to my graph. So we've got testing. And the next more effective in terms of being predictive and less liability is going to be work samples. So if Anheuser-Busch is hiring an electrician to help to be able to maintain as well as change over bottling lines, the industrial psychologist will take the prospective electricians down to a testing board and they have to problem solve. electrical problems or do certain wiring, that's a work sample. An assessment center, that's where you have a number of in-basket activities, role plays, seeing how people put together a PowerPoint, how do they present. That's another real-life preview. How is this person likely to comport themselves in front of groups, work with others, cooperate? The issue with what makes assessment centers less predictive is what you're getting is what's called demand behavior. The person might be operating a certain way in a group for 1 week with observers observing them and writing reports. But as soon as they leave that group, they operate a different way, which means a good actor could present a certain image of themselves to a group in an assessment center. It doesn't go to their motivation. The most effective evaluation for getting the richest, relevant, job relevant, significant information that's predictive long term about individual, both employee for job or spouse or partner for their particular role that they're taking. That's whether the spouse or partner accompanies the employee or stays at home, which has its own set of stressors, is what's called a behavioral event interview. And that should be grounded in a clinical evaluation by someone clinically trained who understands personality structure, because we can talk about words such as cultural agility and define what that looks like in terms of behavior, but it all comes from personality traits that are embedded in a person's personality. There's no platonic form floating around in a person's mind or the universe called cultural agility. It's the same as an immigrant moving from one country to another under duress. How do they create a new life for themselves? The same with a person with a job. They're under stressors also. Does the person have embedded within them a constellation of personality traits of a high degree that allows them to deal with the complexity of their life within the complexity of the relocation events and tasks and also the circumstances they're going into? That's all personality structure. And so one has to do what's called a psychosocial evaluation to see what makes up this person's personality, because it's going to bring the person's personality in conjunction with the personal factors. Are they healthy? Do they have financial problems? Are they peeved at the company? They're just looking for an international assignment in a certain role because they're not getting, think they're getting promoted. How's the spouse doing, or the partner and the children? So one's looking at a constellation, and the only way to do that is a conjunction of formal psychosocial evaluations, which run many hours, and then the data is interpreted, and a formal written report provided to the company, which we call a management thinking model or conceptual map. It's not necessarily a go or no-go. It's providing both the HRBPs who work for the businesses, the actual business unit manager, as well as the country manager, and mobility to be able to make a team decision with these multiple data points. It's called triangulating, Ed. If you think about an aircraft, you got to have multiple data points to know where you are, especially if you're flying at night or in clouds. The same with people. You need multiple data points. I'll stop my litany at this moment.
How do you go about getting busy executives to sit and listen to this? And how expensive is this kind of thing in general? I don't need to know your specific, but this sounds like it's a science, not an art, meaning that with the proper investigation or things to look for, it becomes pretty clear quickly, doesn't it?
Yes.
So in combination with what a company wants from their, let's just say that we're talking about international assignments, just to keep it in this venue for before we go to broader things. So the boss is going to know why they're sending somebody, but nobody else in the company may know that.
It's what they call a select position. Nobody knows, but perhaps the executive team.
Right, right.
The head of HR.
So how would they measure success? Just by not getting fired or not screwing up and then surviving? Is there something more demonstrable?
Okay, and success, we're saying success when the person is assigned to the position.
Yeah, and they go through it.
Okay, and they go through it. Okay, you've got what are called performance indicators. You've got traditional performance indicators, which are tied to the person's job performance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the person's typically evaluated on for those criteria. And if it's a salesperson, it's going to be different than a group vice president who's being sent over to Singapore to acquire a competitor's business. And one thing you ought to know is when we're talking about selecting for positions, there's no one-size-fits-all test. That's spurious. And a lot of vendors, we say in the business, they drink their own Kool-Aid. They are not apprised of the industrial psychology standards and the testing standards and the interviewing standards and how do you manage applicant flows and all those things. And there's no one-size-fits-all. There's a whole science and standards to actually using instruments. You have two types of performance indicators. And this also goes to ROI. It can't be reduced to a mathematical formula. It's actually a process that the company has to be held accountable to, hold itself accountable to. And there's one set, the traditional performance indicators, as I mentioned, that are tied to a person's performance evaluation, which is done yearly about are they succeeding? Where are their strengths? Where are their weaknesses? Are there gaps that are impacting particular measures of their abilities to be successful? The other aspect is non-traditional performance indicators. And these are what underpin a person's ability to do the job and to adjust to a new organizational climate and a different culture and to manage their unique life circumstance and family circumstances. And those go to personality factors, such as it's called the interpersonal domain. It's critical. There's another in terms of cognitive abilities. Is a person able to deal with complexity in this constellation of flux of business and personal and interpersonal situations? Do they have the emotional maturity and the sense of responsibility? Again, goes to the non-traditional performance indicator that underpins performance and success or failure. Is the person able to handle the complexity and to comprehend it and willing to look deeply into that complexity to parse it out, the meaning of things? On the other hand, people who are emotionally immature, which is a critical personality trait for working in for a job success, and particularly in an international environment, any environment for that matter, if the person does not have the emotional maturity, they are likely under stress to not deal with complexity. They will become reactive, emotionally reactive, and they'll function out of personal bias, opinion, or what they think the powers that be are looking for, or what will advance their image. And so they rot out people that tend to be emotionally reactive paired with self-serving, those people rot out an organization. They insidiously destroy organizations. But if you have leadership in an organization whom themselves are not emotionally mature, who are driven by status, income, the type of car they drive, how they're perceived by their peers, how much news time they get, then those people will tend to hire people that think and look like them. Mothers are right when they say, when a kid's a teenager, you have to be really astute about the friendships you're developing. I mean, my mom would never use the word astute, but you have to be really sensitive to the friendships you develop because those people affect you. And the same in businesses, because we're just dealing with human beings. So measures of success and failure are both how are they doing the job, but also how are they playing with other people? Really critical. How do they play with other people? There's three buckets: cognitive abilities, interpersonal domain, interpersonal skills, and values, ethics, and motivation. Interpersonal domain is critical. Does the person play fairly with people or under stress? Is what's important to them also what's good for other people, whether the person in the organization has power or not? It's a complex situation we're dealing with. And I'm trying to say, none of this gets reduced to a cross-cultural online tool. It's far more complicated. And when we talk about ROI, then we're looking at a system where the manager, the country manager, and the manager of that international employee, whether critical technical talent, high potential manager, or leader, they have to be held accountable. Their performance evaluation, their salary, that is the person's boss, their salary has to be tied to their managing the person who's supposed to succeed in their role and report to whatever the group might be called, executive committee or operations council in the organization, and their feet held to the fire. That's ROI. It's long-term. It requires buy-in from the most senior level, the C-levels in the organization. That information goes down. Everybody's going to be held accountable for developing, but also eyeballing people. Are they really doing it? Are they advancing the business? Are they developing a good legacy? Are they identifying talent in country to backfill them? It's very complex.
We understand that, and I really thank you for creating a vast resource that a lot of people don't think about. And thank you for bringing it to light. It's a wonder, as I sit here listening, and in light of the impeachment proceedings, that political parties should have an assessment committee before they let somebody become their leader. We won't get into that at this time.
I could have easily gone there, but I said, I best not, as our parents say, don't talk about religion or politics.
So, Barry Kozlov, how should people get in touch with you, or what is a good read for them to have? Is there something that you could recommend our listeners to pick up and read?
Well, if they want to understand more about selection technology, and selection technology supports everything strategic and tactical that an organization does. And one last thing I wanted to add to this before giving you the data you requested from me or reference points is global assignments are about two things: advancing careers and building the company's business capabilities. So if one couches within the success of the individual, it's not only about the job they're doing, but it's a larger picture in terms of, is the organization building its capacity 5 to 10 years down the road, as well as, is this person showing themselves capable of taking on more responsibility and greater roles in the organization? We can be contacted for articles or additional information at our website. It has a lot of information, articles, even some sample top-level reports, and that what a top-level report looks like. And that would be www.sri-2000.com, or one could look at LinkedIn, Barry Kozlov. There's also my contact information is there. But we'd be, as you could tell, Ed, this is a subject near and dear to us, myself and my colleagues, and we're more than willing to share with companies information to ensure that they're designing first and foremost a selection system, because this has to be a systems approach that aligns with both organizational effectiveness and leadership development programs. If not, if it's simply HR or a business person or somebody in mobility buying an assessment tool, those are looked at as a bolt-on. They're likely to fall off. It's like training programs. They come and go. We're looking at a systems approach where a selection system is aligned and structurally supports what the company is trying to accomplish in terms of business and in terms of developing its leadership.
I've been talking with Barry Kozlov, founder and president of SRI, Selection Research International. Thank you, Barry, for being our guest on Global Radio Talk Show. It's been an MBA class, for sure.
Thanks, Ed, for the time. Really appreciate it.
This is Ed signing off from San Diego. That was Barry from St. Louis.
Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful